Welcome to episode 2 of So 5 Minutes Ago, the podcast where we take a look at the 80s teen movies that defined us. We're your hosts, Kate.
And Shannon.
All right, so we wanted to do some sort of kind of like a Halloween-themed movie coming up. So this week we are talking about the 1989 spooky masterpiece, Teen Witch! Okay, now up top, I grew up watching this movie. It was on the Disney Channel all the time. All the time. I've officially seen it more times than I've seen Citizen Kane and all three Godfathers combined.
So. I would say that's crazy, but I have also seen a few movies. Like, I just watched them over and over and over, so.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you're at this age where you're just like, I have nothing else going on. I'll just sit and watch this.
Yeah.
But Shannon, this was your first time watching this movie as an adult. So what did you think?
Where to start? Okay, so I've never seen a movie quite like this one before. It has like singing and dancing like a musical, but it's not laid out like a musical. They're not telling the story in through music. It's like...
No.
Yeah. So the whole movie seems to be full of contradictions. And the first time I watched it, I was really looking forward to going to IMDb to see how small of a budget they had for filming. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the actual budget, I was floored. Yeah, it was insane. And it didn't make any sense to me. Like, where did the money go? So this movie wasn't a part of my formative canon like it was for you. So I don't have nostalgia to prop up my feelings for it. So I'm just going to be real and say that I did not like this movie. I appreciate it. I appreciate it, but I didn't like it. There were for sure parts that made me laugh, though. And so that's, I'm excited to talk about that stuff.
Yeah. No, if you did not see this in real time, there's no excuse for it. Like, if you're seeing it now for the first time, you're just like, what is this garbage heap? But when you see it as a, like, a young person, you're just like, wow.
I can see that. Because there were so many elements of... Dirty Dancing, there was a little bit of the labyrinth element to it, like spooky stuff. So I totally get it. I get if you were 8 and watching this movie, how you'd be completely enthralled.
Oh, yeah, completely. And it's also just like an easy story. Uh-huh. Like you just watch it. There's some like sexy themes to it. So it's just kind of like, ooh, you know. All right. Oh my gosh. Okay. Without further ado, let's get into this movie. First up top, let's do some behind the scenes trivia. Okay. So the titular Teen Witch is played by Robin Lively, who is Blake Lively's real life older sister.
She also had a 6-episode arc on Twin Peaks season 2, by the way, as a gold digging beauty queen married to the town's mayor. As soon as I saw her come on the screen, I was like, whoa. So that's where my,
I know her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, this movie was originally pitched as a female version of Teen Wolf. I mean, I guess, but I feel like it loses that thread pretty quickly. Yeah.
It has the overarching, you know, like nerdy kid becomes cool kid thing, but...
Yeah, but that's a lot of movies.
Yeah.
So, okay, so the budget for this movie that you were talking about earlier... $2.5 million.
How?
In 1989, $2.5 million.
I don't understand what made the studio shell out for this. It didn't have any huge name actors. Mm-mm. What in the world? I guess just because of the Teen Wolf thing?
Maybe that, and maybe I am assuming they thought it was going to be bigger than it was. Maybe they had to pay for a lot of original music. I have no idea. But it only grossed about $28,000 in box offices worldwide.
That is so sad. That's the saddest opening ever.
That's not even
the opening. That's complete... Run.
That's its box office gross. When it was released its opening weekend, it only made $3,875. But it also opened against Pet Cemetery and Field of Dreams, so it didn't stand a big chance. But still, you would think, like, I'm kind of shocked that it was that bad,
yeah,
considering like how many people know it now. Because it's since become like a cult classic. Theaters hold midnight showings of it.
I didn't
There's
know
like a whole thing. And Alia Shakwa, aka maybe Funke, and Rachel Antonoff made a shot for shot remake of the top that scene. You can see it on YouTube. It's awesome. So like people know about this movie. They grew up with it and stuff. So it's shocking to me that, yeah, like,
it just didn't do anything. It completely fell flat.
Yeah, it just bombed. So, All right. So let's talk about this movie. Supersonic, idiotic, disconnected, not respected. Who would ever really want to go and top that?
Top that.
Let me start by saying that this is essentially a musical, as you said. And I don't use the word iconic flippantly or ever really, but the songs from this movie are iconic. And when the studio made the movie, they didn't want to pay for a soundtrack, so the original songs from this movie were never released on an album.
Wow.
The studio should be punished for their crimes, because that's unacceptable.
So you can't find this music anywhere?
I think since then somebody has made, like, I think maybe on YouTube and Spotify you can find it, but they never released, like, a hard copy album that you could buy with all these songs, which it's like, if you're going to go to the lengths to make a musical, you had a giant budget.
Yeah.
Why would you then just be like, no, we're not going to make an album? Like, that's where your money is.
Yeah.
Make,
especially at that time in 89. Are you kidding? CDs were selling for like $12.
I know. Yeah. And they were just like, nah, we're good. All right, so that being said, we open with a little, with a title sequence that is it's kind of like a music video of that time. If you made a music video in the slowest slow motion available.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Yes. I couldn't believe how long this scene was lasting. I wrote that in my notes, like, how long is this going to go on? And I was, because it was my first viewing, I was so confused about how it even fit into the movie. It was very confusing.
You're like, is my TV glitching? Like when I tried to watch Call Me By Your Name and the first 10 minutes were in slow motion and I was like, this is a really artful decision. And then I realized like, oh, my TV glitched and it's playing at half speed. How does that even happen? But that's what this looks like. I bet if you played this at full speed, it would be like a 15 second opening, but it takes like 4 minutes. It's crazy. Okay, I'm going to play a snippet of the song that's playing over the scene because it immediately sparked nostalgia for me and probably will for you too if you grew up watching this movie. So if you've ever seen, and if you've never seen it, it will kind of give you a sense of like the movie's vibes. Okay.
I was definitely singing that song all night after I watched this movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I've had a song stuck in my head for a couple days, but we'll get to it later. All right. So we see our teen witch on the rooftop at night with the cityscape behind her, and she's wearing this red bustier mini dress situation and slowly twirling around a piece of silk that flutters in the wind. So very slowly. And then slowly a man walks towards her. It takes forever. She walks away. He pursues her slowly. Like, I get that we needed to stretch this to allow for all the credits to play over it, but it is comical
how
slow it is and how long it takes.
Okay.
It is forever.
Yeah. I have in my notes that it takes him an hour and a half to get to her. And I was wondering, did they need to add 15 minutes to the movie's runtime to get like... a guaranteed national release. But when you said that about the credits, I was like, okay, maybe that was the reason for it then.
Yeah, I feel like they filmed it and they were like, we'll play it at half speed while the credits run. And then they realized that there were more credits than they needed. So they're like, okay, slow it down to like 2/3 speed. And then they're like, okay, try it at 1/4 speed. Try it at 1/8 speed. Like,
too many people worked on this movie. We can't. There's too many credits.
Yeah.
Not enough money.
So they dance around for 11 more years, and just when she's about to fall into his arms, Teen Witch wakes up! It was all a dream! In waking life, Teen Witch is a girl named Louise Miller with frizzy hair and spots of zit cream all over her face. And she catches her preteen little brother, Richie, under her bed, eating like a whole cake out of a box.
So
I don't know. and reading her diary. And as she ejects him from the room, he teases her about her crush on a boy named Brad. Okay, I'm going to declare this up top. Her brother grosses me out. Mm-hmm. He's like the human version of like a stray, greasy dog a character finds in a movie or on a TV show. It's so gross.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I was shocked at not only the casting here, but the characterization too. Did they write him as like a gluttonous perv with a bad mullet and like a food stained face? Or are those choices that the actor made?
Right.
It was weird. And the dynamic between the brother and the sister was really upsetting because he's like panting and cooing at her while he reads from her diary entries.
Yeah.
Gross.
Ugh. Yeah.
I can't overstate how much I dislike this character because this goes through the whole movie.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the only one, and I'm glad that you, having just seen it with fresh eyes, also have reached that conclusion. Mm-hmm. So it's not just me. Mm-mm. Okay. All right. So Louise gets dressed and goes downstairs and joins her parents and her brother for a wholesome family breakfast. And then she steps outside her freaking amazing colonial house, complete with like columns and blue shutters, to meet up with her best friend Polly so that they can ride their bikes to school in their matching long trench coats. You know, perfect bike riding attire.
Yeah, like, that's definitely not going to get caught in your bike chain and send you careening into a curb face first.
Right?
Can't wear a trench coat on a bike.
Louise and Polly are they're supposed to be frumpy nerds, but I kind of like their style. It's kind of like classic and cool.
It is.
They're just wearing like sweaters and skirts, and I don't know. It looks a little like Annie Hall if she wore skirts.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I like it.
Across the street, some 29-year-old teenage boy in a convertible is picking up his girlfriend who looks impossibly like a human Barbie, and her name is Randa. I checked. It's not Rhonda.
Okay.
It's Randa. This, quote, boy is named Brad, and it's Louise's crush. Brad is played by Dan Gauthier. Yeah. This was the hot guy in so many TV shows and movies at this time. He was Kevin Buchanan on One Life to Live and All My Children. I don't know. I'm not a soap person, but in case you are, he's that guy. He was also on both Melrose Place and Beverly Hills 90210. So he's like your typical soapy, handsome guy. Mm-hmm. I think he's Dick from Beverly Hills 90210.
Okay, I was going to ask you. I didn't recognize him.
Thanks for the tip, Dick. Fun fact, his girlfriend that he's picking up here, the actress, ended up being his wife in real life, and they're still together today.
Aw, so cute.
I know.
I love that.
All right, next we're at high school, and there's all kinds of skating boarders and BMX bicyclers doing cool bike tricks and some, quote, rap guys, quote, rapping in the hallway.
Take it out of town and we're feeling cool. Don't really need to be hanging in school. It's okay, we got nothing to lose. Can't you see, baby, it's a high school blues. Hands in the sea because it's a waste of our time. Because anything that we'll learn about making a dime. What the heck, we know that we are no fools. Because we're just stuck with the high school blues.
Hey, did you wonder if those guys are white?
Did you wonder if my jaw literally dropped when that number started? Because it did.
It's a pretty strong musical start to this movie.
Oh, wow.
All right, so the main, quote, rap guy is this guy named Rhett, and he asked Louise if she really belongs in high school, I think implying that her clothes made her look old, which is ironic considering this actor is actually 24 in real life in this movie.
Okay, I misheard that line because I thought he was roasting her for being so young. Because the casting just has me all messed up. Like, I thought maybe she looked like a little girl and he was, like, roasting her for being in high school. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. So after I read that in your note that you sent, I went back and watched, rewatched this scene. And I still have no idea which one of us is right. So great job, writers.
I know.
Like, yeah, it wasn't clearly conveyed what he was implying. So, yeah. All right, so some nerds approach Louise, and you know that they're nerds because they're all wearing glasses, gross, to tell her that she's their pick for Latin Club president, just as Brad's girlfriend and two other popular girls complain about rich girl stuff a couple lockers down. Louise comes into English class late, and the teacher, Mr. Weaver, gives her crap for it while expositing that she skipped a grade or two. So that he's kind of like, just because you skip grades doesn't mean that you get to walk in here late or whatever. And she's actually in senior English. She's really smart, you guys. See, because she's in senior English. Brad and Randa are also in her class.
Maybe it's just because I'm watching this with fresh eyes, but something that really stuck out was the soundstage that the classroom set is built on. It's so obviously a soundstage. Like, they didn't make a ceiling or a fourth wall. And I'm just wondering if that was supposed to lend itself to the idea that this is a musical, you know? Like, oh, we're on a stage. Or a play, because, you know, there's like a play within the movie. Or is this a dream within her dream because we open in a dream? Or was it just a really bad use of $2.5 million?
Honestly, where did the $2.5 million go? Because this classroom is bonkers. Like, it's like two-thirds of a classroom.
It's like it's something you'd see in your dream, right? It's how you would dream being in a classroom.
Yeah, and it's really disorienting, and I don't think that's purposeful. I don't think they're like, yeah, we'll make this a real, like, surreal. No, I think they were just like, we don't have a classroom. We get, you know, two parts of this high school to film in, and one of them's not a classroom, so this is what we're doing. Like, the teacher is up on a dais that's, like, 3 feet above the students, and then the wall behind his desk is just a massive bookshelf full of books. But then you can see, you can fully see the top of the shelf where it doesn't meet the ceiling, and then above that is just blackness. Like, it fully looks like a soundstage with 20-foot ceilings. And even at times when he's talking to her, when he's standing next to her and the camera's shooting up in his face, there's just black space above him. There's no ceiling. So you're just like, where is this? Where in time is this classroom? Yeah,
it was really bizarre. I didn't know if that was an actual choice that they made or if they just had not enough money left over for a ceiling.
Yeah, this movie's not that smart. The teacher collects the class's assignments and he discovers that there's a piece of paper stuck to Louise's homework. And in this like heartburn inducing scene of humiliation, he starts to read it out loud in front of the class. And it's a steamy page from her diary detailing a fantasy between her and Brad. Awful. Mm-hmm. My gosh. She cries and runs out to hide in the bathroom. Oh my gosh. Okay. And next we're inside an 80s trope nightmare, the one where the popular girls dance around in unitards in the locker room while the unpopular loser looks on sadly. They all start throwing clothes around and doing this, like, quote, spontaneous yet completely choreographed dance to this song. Ah! I'm giving up my hot style to keep the little boys. Okay, tell me that was the song stuck in your head. Is it? No. Okay.
This is one of my favorite things about the movie, Kate. Sorry. The choreography is eye candy. But I agree that it's completely egregious and obviously exploitative. Uh-huh. Because the leotards are cut so high and they're made of really thin material. So you can just imagine what we're seeing on, you know, 26-year-old women in a locker room.
26-year-old teenagers. They're all in like these light purple leotards with various, some have shorts under or over or like nothing or sweatshirts, and then they do all kinds of like wacky shenanigans where they're like on each other's shoulders and they have like a towel so it looks like they're one tall person. It's just, this is so obnoxious. If you're Louise watching this, you're just like, freaking rich girls, for sure. I get it. Goodness. All right, so outside, Brad is being a sweaty thirst trap in golden hour sunlight, doing some shirtless football tossing and manly push-ups and sit-ups while Louise spies on him. And I do mean manly because this, quote, teen actor is 26 and looks like a yoked 34-year-old man.
Yeah, no high schooler is this jacked, and you can't not see it.
No, and like I know that I'm always hung up on, you know, I understand that like they get adults to play teenagers. I'm not stupid. Like I know that that happens. But sometimes they look so old. It's like when you watch Grease and you're, I didn't understand until years later. I'm like, they're supposed to be in high school. They're like 40. So,
oh my gosh.
It just cracks me up every time I see this. I'm like, totally, this is a teenager. This dude works in like a law firm.
Yeah.
This is not.
He's got like 7 kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And since I guess all the students do all the extracurriculars, now we're in the school theater for play rehearsal, I think, where the drama teacher is played by Marcia Wallace, a.k.a. the voice of Mrs. Krabappel from The Simpsons. And she appoints Louise and Brad to do or to act out a romantic scene. And they stop just short of a kiss. And then the lead parts are awarded to Brad and a popular girl named Kiki.
Mm, poor Louise. Always the assistant costume mistress. Never the lead.
Exactly.
What a sad runner-up prize.
All right, so that night Louise is riding her bike home, and Brad and his girlfriend drive by in his convertible and swerve and run her off the road, which is pretty serious. She and her bike slide down an embankment, and Brad gets out to help her and offer her a ride home, but her pride is bruised and she says, no, it's fine. As she's walking her bike with a busted tire, lightning flashes, and then the payphone she finds is disconnected. Gee whiz, could this day get any worse? Just then, she sees a very mysterious house with a fortune tellery sign outside that says, Madam Serena.
And I just want to quickly draw your attention to her eggplant purple flare leg track pants that are just a hair too short on her.
Yeah.
Again, I ask you, where did the budget go? Because it didn't go to wardrobe.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that at the beginning of the movie, they're really trying to telegraph, like, look what a dork she mm-hmm. is, so that it makes the spoiler, the, you know.
The reveal.
The glow up later, yeah. Like that much more dramatic. But also, she wasn't wearing these pants earlier. So are these her, like, post-play?
Yeah.
Practice
plans? I didn't understand either. I know there's the continuity is an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get into that. So she goes into the house, and if you've ever seen a movie before, it looks exactly like you'd think it would. It's just like, you know, throw pillows and candles and whatever. A short woman, a tiny woman, comes through a beaded curtain, and it's Zelda Rubinstein, or Tangina if you've seen The Poltergeist, or The Organ Player if you've seen 16 Candles. So Louise just wants to use the phone, but Madame Serena says she never uses a phone and convinces her to sit down for a palm reading. And she starts to do like a real surfacey reading, but then she takes a closer look at her palm and...
It's you.
What do you mean, it's me?
You're not a mark. You're one of us.
One of who?
When is your 16th birthday? Oh, wait. Next week, am I right?
Yeah.
You will receive these powers on your 16th birthday.
What powers?
Strange things will start to happen, but you must trust me. Trust me?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay. Whatever.
Which is a pretty cavalier reaction for the information she just received. Like, she was just told, like, oh, you're a witch and you're going to inherit powers. And she's like, cool, power. So can I use your phone or what's happening? Like, she just doesn't care. All right. Next, we're celebrating said 16th birthday with Louise's dog turd covered cake.
Gross.
There will be a visual. I'm not wrong. It's supposed to be a sweet 16th party, but only her family is there. She opens a, quote, very expensive gift from her mom that her mom found for her in the junior miss department. And it's a sweater vest that Louise politely calls different. Like, oh, that's different. But I would totally wear it today. It's cute.
I liked it.
It's like, yeah, it's like a teal knitted sweater stripe. Vest with mm-hmm. thin, like thin kind of salmon pink stripes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I would wear that. Just then the phone rings and it's Polly telling her that the reason nobody showed up to her party is because Brad's girlfriend Randa is throwing a party that night too. Like, as if anybody would have gone to Louise's party anyway. Yeah. But it's nice of Polly to do this because it's kind of like, hey, don't feel bad. It's because Randa's having a party. That night, Louise is tossing and turning in her bed as Madame Serena's voice rings in her head about the powers and whatnot. And the next day at school, we're in home ec and the teacher is teaching sexual education. She pulls an umbrella out of her bag, and when she asks the class what it might represent, Rappy Rapperton delivers this answer.
A Roger, a love wand, a joystick, dong, zip a lizard, tally whack, and trouser snake schlong.
And I want to submit this as a shirt idea. Like, one of those shirts with, like, single left justified lines in Helvetica of all those descriptors.
Okay, let me just, hold on. Let me make a quick note here. Penis wrap shirt. Got it.
All right, so outside, Louise is trying to get a Coke out of a vending machine, and Brad walks up and Fonzie hits it and then tosses her the Coke, and she's all like, thanks, Brad. Okay, so P.S., this is what I was talking about. I usually track clothing continuity errors because I find them fun, but they're out of control in this movie. Like, she's wearing clothes from the previous days and this day and then a different shirt in the very next scene, yeah. Even though it's supposed to be on the same day, and it's enough to make a person insane, so I stopped tracking it. In the theater costume department, Louise and Ms. Krabappel are bonding when Ms. K finds a giant amulet necklace. She gives it to Louise, saying that she thinks that it'll bring her good luck.
Yes. The, quote, very old amulet from the clearance rack at Ross Dress for Less. There will be a visual. I do need to pause here and give it the Making It a Meal Award to the background nerd in the next scene. It's gonna be a gif. He's coming down the stairs, and it is just glorious.
Really?
I'm so proud of this actor. He's on screen for probably like half a second, and he gives it all he's got.
He's like, I'm riding this half a second to the top.
Yeah, it's great.
Awesome. I cannot wait to see that. Oh, and then P.S. in the Top That remake that Alia Shakwa and Rachel Antonoff made, this necklace is a Guess Who game square on a chain.
That's awesome.
And bring her luck, it does, because then she runs into popular girl Randa in the hall, whose cousin is coming into town this weekend and needs a date for the dance. And does Louise want to double with her and Brad? Whatever is she going to wear? What she's going to wear is the saddest sad sack that ever did sack. It's like a moss-colored ankle-length Ren Faire skirt and a button-down collared plaid shirt under her birthday sweater vest, which I still maintain is cute, even under these very unfortunate circumstances.
Yeah. That sweater is the least of her wardrobe problems at this time. And actually, it looks like the whole family has sweater problems, because you got to check out her dad's cardigan atrocity in our Instagram visuals.
Her dad wears some aggressive sweaters in this movie. Like, every scene is just like, dang.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have a lot to do, so they just gave him a ton of very
eye-assaulting
sweaters.
I think the costumer just went to, like, the bargain bin at some, like, I don't know, Burlington, and grabbed all the clearance sweaters for this movie.
All right, so her dad tries to reassure her that she looks cute, but she points to a model in a trendy magazine and says, this is what everyone is wearing. Then Randa's cousin Dave shows up, and he's a gross nerd too, with his glasses and his plaid shirt and his bow tie and his sweater vest and pompadour. Oh, just kidding. This supposedly nerdy guy is perfectly attractive and would totally fit in at any, like, modern day trendy startup.
Yeah.
He looks great.
Yes. Dorky cousin David is actually an adorable Morrissey knockoff. If he didn't keep pulling his face, he pulls all these weird faces, and I get it because he's a nerd, whatever. But if in like the half a second that you get of him looking normal, he's adorable.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, no, they didn't do a good job casting this, because it's just like, oh, he's just kind of like kind of hot but goofy.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the harvest dance, people are 80s dancing aggressively. Brad is there in a maroon shirt and a bolo tie. Louise excuses herself to go to the bathroom to change into her cool girl outfit. Right, so this outfit is so many things. The base layer is like a pink ribbed bodycon dress, and then there's a blue collared shirt with long short sleeves. They go down to like her elbow that she's tied at her waist. And then there's a multicolored tulle tutu and fishnets, and then pink eyeshadow and purple sunglasses that have a plastic either palm tree or tropical bird on the corner. I couldn't tell. So she emerges from the bathroom looking cool, and her date laughs at her, which is the correct response for how she looks. And then during a slow song, Louise's date asks if she wants to go smoke some weed. Drugs, you guys! So she ditches him to go hang with Polly. And
she, table number 13, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, I did notice that. I was like, ooh, spooky. She's looking at Brad and wishing that he would look at her and come over and talk to her. And then he totally does. He takes her outside and starts waxing poetic about the stars like a real basic, and then kills the mood by asking if he can actually come over to Louise's house to get some help on his homework, because if he doesn't pass English, he can't play football, and then he'll totally blow a shot of going to SC. Like, nobody cares. Nobody cares about this problem. Then Dave is taking Louise to a party at Kiki's in Brad's car. He's being all gross and handsy and gross when Louise screams that she wishes that he'd just leave her alone, and then he evaporates, leaving the car swerving all over the road. Louise manages to get the car somewhere, undetermined. Yeah. She just parks it and runs out. It might be at her house. It might be Brad's house. I have no idea. And starts freaking out about her possible powers. She rides her bike to Madame Serena's, but she's not home. So she returns home to find her brother making a mess and a giant disgusting pizza in the kitchen.
Kate, he's kneading the pizza with all of the toppings on it. It's making squishing noises, and he's covered in marinara. I hate this.
It's so gross. I think there's marshmallows on the pizza. Yeah, and he's like digging his fingertips into it. It's...
And he's not, and he's not like a cute little boy actor, which is fine if you know, your casting choice, but you can't cast a weird looking character and then make them do gross things. You just can't do that.
It's effective.
I guess.
So they get into a fight where she delivers the rubber versus glue curse, and then her brother delivers this memorable line.
You think you're hot stuff because you went to a dance. Dreamer, nobody wants to date you because you're a dog. A dog! A dog!
Okay. And as repellent as I find this actor, I do love that line delivery.
Yeah.
It's so good. You think you're hot stuff because you went to a dance. Anyway, surprise, turns into a dog. So she scoops him up and panics and takes him into the bathroom where there is for some reason a fully prepared bubble bath. I have so many questions. Who made this bubble bath? Who is it for? Because Louise just came home and her parents aren't home, and her brother is the only one who's there, and he's gross and doesn't bathe. And even if he does, when Louise came home, she discovered him elbow deep making a pizza. So is this just a household that always has a bubble bath ready to go? This is so weird. Like, there's just a bubble bath waiting for her. Unless it's part of her witch powers, but she didn't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
She didn't know. Okay, so she throws the dog into the tub, which is rude, and somehow this changes her brother back into a human.
Yeah, where was PETA on this one? Like,
I know.
Is this before that they passed the act that made you have to have, like, a representative on set to make sure that animals weren't harmed? Because she doesn't place the dog in the tub. She dumps it from like 2 feet into the
tub.
And
it's like fighting her the whole time. It's like wriggling and trying to get out of her arms and get away from the tub. And she's like, no, into the tub. So this is even like now when there's animals on set, they have people where you're like, you cannot upset the animals.
Yes.
Like, you can't be loud and you cannot upset them. So this is way before that. They're just like, throw it. Who cares? The next day, Louise is at Madame Serena's recounting last night's events, and Serena explains that because Louise is a young witch, her spells are weak and can easily be reversed by things like water, but eventually they'll get stronger, and that she'll be able to make anything happen that she wants to happen. So this is what I'm saying, is Louise didn't know that the water was going to reverse the thing, so I don't think she conjured it.
So why did she put the dog in the water to begin with? Just to hide it, I guess, from her mom?
Maybe. Okay. I guess. Like, it wouldn't jump out and then track water and bubbles. Yeah. We're giving this way more thought than the writers did. Yeah. I don't know why we care. Okay. Only then does the very perceptive Serena notice Louise's gigantic necklace and says that it's time for her to see something. And then we spend the next 13 minutes of our lives watching Serena get a book off a shelf.
The pacing of this movie is bonkers. It's either skipping entire portions of scenes so that we have no idea what happened, or we're spending a third of the whole runtime watching Serena roll a library ladder around in front of a 2-foot wide bookshelf. You notice she never climbs the ladder, by the way. So
she just moves it. And like, I mean, I get that she's small, so she doesn't move fast. And I understand, yeah. But like, just skip to where she has the book. Like, I'm watching this and I'm just like,
I know.
Go.
Yeah. For God's sake.
Edit. Okay, so she opens to a page and shows Louise a picture of herself, being Louise, as a witch in a previous life born in 1636. In the picture, she's wearing the same amulet necklace. And instead of immediately covering herself in terror diarrhea and screaming, "What the actual F are you talking about?" like I would, Louise just takes this information about reincarnation and witch powers at face value. Like, she's just like, "Weird, I wonder how I got the necklace." And it's like, what? You are missing the point. You were, here's, like, if somebody showed me a picture of myself in an old, old book from 1636, yeah. I would pass out. I would cry. There's so many reactions, yeah. I would have. And she's just like, "Whoa, how'd I get the necklace?" Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Serena demonstrates her power potential by having Louise put her hand over a lump of coal and recite some incantations, and the coal turns to a stack of $20 bills. And since nobody explained to Serena how simply printing money will screw up the global economy, but this does finally freak out Louise enough to try to make her make a quick escape. And as she's leaving, Serena tries to empathize with her.
"I know what it's like to be 16. I've been 16 four times already. Liebchen, with me in your corner,
they won't have Louise Miller or kick around anymore."
"Thanks. Thanks, Madam Serena."
"Let me be."
So weird.
Zelda Rubinstein makes some interesting acting choices there. Like, that music you hear at the end is her doing like a castanet dance.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is really weird because she keeps calling Louise Liebchen too, which I guess is German maybe for like my love or.
Yeah. Or little love or something. Yeah.
So confusing. Also, Madam Serena isn't exactly the "with great power comes great responsibility" type, I guess.
Nope.
She's just like, make this money, do these things. Yeah. Like, you're fine. Don't worry about it. I'm here.
Just spraying it everywhere. Yep. Yeah. All right. This is also where I'm going to take this opportunity to mention. Okay. Remember her date, Dave, who disappeared, mm-hmm. while he was driving the car? Never mentioned again. Like, a whole ass human disappeared, and there's no scene of Louise telling Randa, or of Randa asking whatever happened to her cousin because he never came home that night, or like of Dave's family filing a missing persons report, or Louise breaking the news to Dave's parents, like, "Hey, I'm responsible for possibly sending your son into an inescapable wormhole in space. I don't know where he is." Like, nothing. Nothing. Everyone just goes about their teen witch business. Like, "Hey, this necklace is weird, right? Like, where is he?"
I definitely clocked that. But I also, it's one of the things I appreciate about the movie is its just ability to just be very flippant about all of the magic that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. No is consequences.
Like, I just listened to this podcast called The Left Right Game, where when people disappear, everyone's knowledge of them disappears. Ooh. Also. So maybe it's that,
yeah.
thing. But like, there's no way this movie was that smart. I think they just counted on 8-year-old brains to, yeah. be like, "Show us the makeover scene." Like, they just don't care. But I care about Dave. I want to know where he is. All right. So anyway, next we see Louise sitting on an empty park carousel at night. She has a spell book that Serena has given her and is trying to build up her spell power or whatever. So she conjures the wind and then the rain, and then she dances around in the rain. And all I can think about is how much water damage that centuries old spell book is incurring. But whatever.
Same. I was like, get the book out of the rain, genius.
Yeah.
So bizarre. I mean, typical teen though, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe not me.
Yeah, but it's,
I would have thought about
it's like
that.
I mean, maybe, but it's like a beautifully leather-bound book with like old, tattered, handwritten ink in beautiful scroll. And she's just like dancing in the rain. She's going to take this book back and Serena's going to be like, oh, you don't get to borrow books anymore. Okay, so next she decides to try a truth-telling spell. The next day, Louise is watching the three popular girls butter each other's bread about how awesome they are in the locker room. Louise holds her necklace and recites a spell, and then when Polly catches her, Louise lies and says that it's a cool new U2 song. But then we see that her spell actually worked on the popular girls, and then things get way harsh, way fast.
To tell you the truth, Kiki, your voice is lousy. You sound like Pee Wee Herman.
What?
She's right. You cannot carry a tune.
What do you mean? Yes, I can.
She's just being honest. Your voice sounds terrible. I mean, you shouldn't even be allowed to sing Happy Birthday, okay?
Well, but Akshon, you know, I don't even like you.
Neither does anybody else. Great. Then I won't have to pick you up every day and deal with your alky mother.
Oh. Really, Kiki, your mother's a joke. Everyone feels sorry for you. And who are you, Princess Di? Look, you're too lazy to even cover your roots.
Shut up, skank!
I was just kidding, Randa. I really do like your hair.
Randa, you know, I think the whole world can see your roots. Hmm. Oh, butt out, bitch!
Jeez.
I love it. All right, that sound was Randa pushing Kiki into the pool, which breaks the spell for Kiki, but wow, I don't think root maintenance is a proportionate comeback for making fun of someone's alky mom. Oof.
It's all believable though, especially for high schoolers who are constantly trying to out pretty each other like these girls.
Yeah, but man, just it's bringing up someone's alky mom, like, yeah, your mom's super embarrassing, everybody knows it, and it's like, whoa. All right, then we're back at Serena's, who is trying to cast a spell on a toad, and Louise rushes in to tell her how her day went and ask if there's a spell that she can cast to make Brad love her. Serena says, of course, but in exchange, she's going to have to help her with a spell. They hold hands and say some stuff, and the toad disappears. Serena gives Louise a bottle and tells her that when Brad comes over to study that night, to sprinkle it on her bed and get Brad to sit on it while she says a spell, and he'll become her love slave. Serena then rushes Louise out the door, and we see that the reason is that she has transformed the toad into her own love slave. And while this situation has its own problematic implications, this guy looks like an actor in an 80s bank commercial, and he has the biggest helmet of blonde hair that I have ever seen. Uh-huh. It's so wide and tall, but smooth. Like, it has so much... it has so much volume underneath the shellac surface. It's amazing. And she asks him to speak, and then he ribbits in a way that is like so straightforward and earnest that it might be the only spot of actual comedy in this movie.
They are really like staring deeply into each other's eyes here too as he ribbits.
Yeah, and he doesn't like you said, like he doesn't pull a silly face. He's just like, ribbit. Yeah.
Oh, man. It.
All right, Shannon, take it from here.
All right, well, the frog print scene breaks, and we see Louise sprinkling the potion around her bed on the floor. Not what Serena said to do. So maybe that's why the spell doesn't work. Anyway, Louise is running around covering lamps with red scarves like it's some Harlequin romance novel when Brad knocks on her bedroom door. He comes in with an armful of school books and asks why it's so dim in the room, LOL, and wondering where all the chairs are. Okay, now I never had a chair in my bedroom growing up, so this is weird to me that he would assume that there should even be one chair, let alone several.
Okay, thank you. I also noted this because her brother also comes in asking where all the chairs are, and I'm like, this is some rich kid nonsense, because if everyone is beside themselves over the lack of chairs, Growing up, I had a twin bed, a dresser, and a shelf, and that was all of my bedroom real estate. Like, there was no chair space. What is the deal? What is the deal with these chairs? Everyone is just like, where's the chairs? It's like, how many chairs do you have if everybody's like, well, this is different.
And does her room look empty? And like, how big is her room? It was bizarre. And so I guess the whole point of the chairs is so that Louise can tell Brad that all the chairs are being reupholstered. So they'll have to sit on the bed.
Yeah. So just sit on the bed.
The chairs were our vehicle for the spell, I guess. Okay. So Brad has a seat on the bed as Louise's dad comes in with a snack tray. Yum. Of milk and whole apples. Ew. And asks where all the chairs are. As he leaves the room, we can clearly see a chair by the bedroom door, by the way. It's got clothes all over it.
Like a giant puppy.
Yeah, overstuffed.
Nicely upholstered.
Yeah. Louise sits next to Brad on the bed and begins her incantation. When it's clear that it's not working to turn Brad into her love slave, she opens her closet to reveal a William Randolph Hearst mount of dining chairs stacked to the heavens.
Now I understand why everyone was asking, because since she normally keeps 12 chairs in her room, their absence would be noticeable.
All right, I guess.
Yeah, she's just, just like, oh, that's why, because you always have a million chairs in here.
Like a classroom's worth of chairs all stacked up in her closet. So the next day at school, Brad apologizes to Louise for setting her up with David. Remember him, who is now officially a missing person, and thanks her for her help with his schoolwork. In study hall, Brad starts to complain to Louise about Randa when Mr. Weaver comes over and smacks Louise's desk with his teaching stick, knocking her purse to the floor. He physically prevents her from picking up the contents of her purse, and instead, he scrutinizes them and shows them one by one to the class, including a pack of birth control pills, which he proceeds to ridicule her for because there are none missing.
Birth control pills. All in their place. Just thinking about it, eh, Louise?
I'm warning you.
Warning me? Well, listen to that, will you? And what will you do if I don't stop? Tell my mommy?
Fire this teacher immediately, and better yet, charge him with the harassment of a minor.
This would never fly. This is insane. Oh my gosh. It should also be noted that while Brad was complaining about Randa earlier, like he and Louise were talking, Louise asked him why he doesn't just break up with her, and he says because everyone wants to go out with the most popular girl, which is something to remember for later, and is also gross. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That night during a thunderstorm, Louise makes a voodoo doll of Mr. Weaver, and then the next day in class, she undresses the doll, causing Mr. Weaver to undress himself in turn, in front of the class. A montage of hijinks ensues when Louise leaves the doll just laying around the house. Ricky, her little brother, finds it and gets ice cream all over it, because of course he does, and then he kicks it down the stairs. I thought that was pretty funny.
And then doesn't he fall? He falls down the stairs in real life or whatever. Yeah.
And then mom finds it and tosses it into the washing machine, causing Weaver to walk through an active car wash to the tune of an obvious Robert Palmer ripoff, by the way. The music in this movie is abysmal.
Hey, you bite your tongue, Shannon.
Louise uses her powers to help her hapless drama teacher win at life, hit the lottery, meet a man, and then take a sabbatical to travel the world.
There he is, Count Legando. Oh, darling, this is that darling, Louise. Louise, I'm leaving everything in your capable hands. Take hope, dear child. Believe me, anything can happen.
I love the problematic music cue there.
Yeah, spicy.
Now we're at the part you've all been waiting for. Maybe the whole reason you've even listened to this episode.
Oh my gosh, everyone, shut up and listen.
Stay calm. Louise and Polly are riding their bikes home from a tennis lesson we never saw when they come upon some white boys in the middle of the street doing some pretty spot-on quirky St. Clair moves to the beat of some happening grooves.
Not just any boys, though, but Rappy Rapperton Rhett, who also happens to be Polly's crush, and his funky fresh friends.
I'm king, and they know it. When I snap my fingers, everybody says short. I'm hot, and you're not. But if you want to hang with me, I'll give it one shot. Top that.
Yes!
If you want to hang with me. Oh, my goodness. Louise says that Polly should jump in and hang out rap battle style with the boys, and then we get this clip.
Oh, my God.
You can dream until you blue, but you will never top that.
Let's go back the other way.
No, just go up and then talk to him.
Are you kidding? I'm so embarrassed. Look at how funky he is.
Here's a little pro tip, Polly. A lot of people in this scene should be embarrassed, but you are not one of them. With the help of Louise's powers, Polly finds the courage to join in the hipness, and we get to witness the suburbanist rap battle of all time.
Supersonic, idiotic, disconnected, not respected. Who would ever really want to go and top that? Such a waste of pretty face, but hanging in your nose space. I wish that you would take a look and really stop that. Top that. Well, stop that. I don't really give up about trying to top that. Top that. Stop that. I wish you finally take a real look and really stop that.
What's this?
Stop that.
What gives?
Top that. I don't really give up about trying to stop that.
Top that.
Big deal.
Stop that.
Unreal.
You can try until you blue.
I will make a fool of you.
Top that.
Hey, Shannon, at this time, would you like to redact your previous statement in which you called the music in this movie, quote, abysmal?
No.
Because that was amazing. Wow. Okay, a few things. a few things about this scene. Polly comes out of the gate blazing, spitting rhymes, supersonic, idiotic, against this dingus that's just like, I'm hot, and you're not. Like, she clearly wins the rap battle, but then her ending is so weak with her top that as she strikes, a white boomer dad trying to be with it pose, yeah. And it's just like, dang it, Polly, you have this! I'm still with her, though.
Yeah.
Because I can't get on board with, I'm hot.
And you're and not. You're not.
I'm the king, and they know it. Oh, my gosh. Okay, also, please go to our Instagram at So5MinutesPod with the number 5 to see the video clip of the scene, because the audio is really only half the glory. The dancing, quote, dancing, cannot and will not be ignored. Like Polly's bear claw hands while she's rapping. It looks like she's holding oranges. Yeah. And just, they're dancing. Oh, my gosh. I know that this is an overplayed, stupid hipstery, ironic, ooh, remember that scene? But when you rewatch it, it's, I mean, what did you think watching it? Because I didn't tell you that this was coming.
No, it was shocking. It was shocking. And I'm going to have to see if I can do some kind of side-by-side gif of the boys dancing at the very beginning and then the quirky St. Clair move from Waiting for Guffman, because it is spot on. I mean,
it is.
One of them learned it from the other one, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. And, yeah, speaking of which, I would spend, as you said, Wall Street money to sit in and watch the cast learning the choreography for this scene. a choreographer taught them all these moves, and they had to learn them, all the, self-hugging arms and the, flappy feet dances, and then she has to come up and they do, when they rap, she leans into him and he leans away, and he leans into her and she leans away. It's
all the blocking for it. I know.
Yeah, breakdance battling without touching each other. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely some West Side Story stuff going on here too. It is.
And they didn't even, with no warning, they just put this scene in this movie. They like, did. Here, you guys all.
Yes, they just, all have they to. Just drop it in. Like I said, it's, you could call the movie a musical, but it's not built, the plot is not built around the music. The music is just flash. There. Like, it's just there. Yeah.
It just happens to us.
Yeah.
And like,
it's like they made the movie and then they just carpet bombed it with all these like little music scenes.
Yeah. And like, who gave them permission to do this scene to us where it's just like, you're going to watch this. This is going to happen. But thank God they did.
It is. It is a precious gem of a thing that will forever be remembered. Not by me, but by some.
I don't know if we can be friends anymore. Continue.
Okay. Louise goes to visit Serena and tells her that she couldn't go through with a love spell because she wants Brad to love her for her and not because of a spell. Serena's like, nah, girl, use your powers. which prompts Louise to show Serena a picture of Shauna, the rock star, who we've never heard before now. She just all of a sudden appears. And says that that's who she wants to look like. Serena pulls out the big coffee table book of spells to find a most popular girl's spell, which she whips up and sends home with Louise.
This book is giant. And she opens straight to the popular girl's spell page. She's like, ah, here it is.
Okay, now all Louise had to do is get an article of clothing from Shauna to complete the spell.
Oh, just that, and then spin around counterclockwise 13 times at 45 RPM. Like, how would you measure that? How? And what if you don't do it at 45 RPM? Then this is all for naught? This is dumb.
See, I thought that was a funny little thing that Madame Serena said. I didn't think that was actually literal. Because it was a rock star.
But then she does it.
Yeah, so. You're right. She does do it. So,
yeah. But I'm just like, why mention 45 RPM? Like, okay, yeah. I'm going to have to go get a tool to measure this as I'm spinning.
So Shauna is played by Cindy Valentine, an actual Billboard charting artist from the 80s. She also co-wrote the song she sings in the movie, Never Gonna Be the Same Again, which is
Never Gonna
awesome.
Be the same again.
I love it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
The girls head to Shauna's concert since, you know, it's in town within walking distance on the perfect night. At the concert, the girls walk in through the band entrance and Louise makes her name appear on the press list. The girls get backstage passes and head to the stage wings where Shauna spots Louise, runs over and gives her her lucky bedazzled denim jacket. So that security guard's getting fired, right? Louise's scattershot spell casting is just costing all kinds of people their jobs.
And their lives.
Yeah.
As it turns out.
Their very existence is at stake. Back in her bedroom, Louise performs the spell and then comes walking down the stairs for her big reveal. And she looks exactly the same. Just with a new denim jacket. Maybe her hair is a little bit bigger and crispier, and she's got black pumps on over purple slouch socks. Okay, so maybe she looks a little worse.
Okay, also, her denim vest, which I don't know if we're supposed to believe she altered Shauna's jacket, or I don't think so.
I don't know.
But if she did, she murdered it, because... It's a vest, like a jacket with the sleeves cut off, but then there's pieces of flowery upholstery fabric, like the kind that a grandma's vest or a throw pillow would be made out of. Like when you see it, you'll be like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. On every available surface of this vest, bordered by tan lace trim. And then there's just like superfluous medals and baubles all stuck to it all over the place. This is like the weakest hot girl reveal I've ever seen.
It is. So I'm wondering if the weak reveal is because she already tried to zhuzh up her look on her own. Like if we had her from the opening scene after the dream sequence where her hair's like all frizzy and she's got like the zit cream on and she's in that weird dowdy house coat. If that was our template and then she magicked herself hot, that would be a reveal worth revealing.
Yeah.
But
because
yeah,
she does kind of like, yeah, she does get a little like polished when Brad comes over. She like has her hair up and she, mm-hmm. you know, has some makeup on and stuff. But yeah, it's not like she comes out and you're like, dang. It's just like, oh, okay. She has like a tiered skirt on. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Heels. All right. Got it.
Yeah.
A very exciting montage follows now to the tune of The Most Popular Girl as we watch.
I'm gonna be the most popular girl. In case you don't remember, it's that song.
That was perfect. And now we watch Louise make lots of new friends while she loses her best friend, Polly, in the process.
Okay, and then during this montage, there's a, quote, rap breakdown, where she's walking alone in what looks like a very scary industrial part of town, and carloads, plural, of guys, like guys hanging out of every window and every door, just packed cars of guys are driving alongside her, rapping at her, and the lyrics, like, including lyrics that say, like, hey, pretty baby, don't put up a fight, and... Oof. This would be completely terrifying. She's smiling like it's cute, like, but I would be looking for ways to escape murder. It's not okay. No. She's by herself. Guys rapping at her. But also, I really love her outfit in this shot.
Yeah.
it's
cute.
Yeah, it's like a Hawaiian shirt, like a cute little red Hawaiian shirt tucked into a red tiered skirt, and it looks really cute on her. No excuse. It's not okay for these guys to be, you know, terrifying her just because of her cute outfit.
Yeah. No, she's got some really cute outfits in this whole montage. Mm-hmm. There's some, it's like she must have magicked herself a whole new wardrobe because there's some really great late 80s, early 90s looks in this montage.
Totally. Yeah, I like her purple when she's walking down the corridor and everybody's following her, like the runners with Forrest Gump. And she's wearing this like light purple.
Yeah.
I like that outfit.
Yeah, I like the one where she's like, I think she's carrying her lunch tray and it's like a pseudo business outfit.
There's like super a jacket cute. With shoulder pads and a red shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. So then one of those weird segues happens where it seems like they cut out a really crucial plot point because we go from Louise being catcalled by three carloads of boys to her climbing a very dusty, steep hill in her pumps.
It's like smash cut to Brad's car and like sexy it's saxophone really music weird. And you're just like, what happened? What's happening?
Yeah. We get no scene where he asks her to go with him anywhere. It's so weird.
Yeah.
So it turns out that Brad's leading her to an abandoned house on a hill, and maybe it's supposed to read as romantic, but it's pretty obviously another F shack. So once and inside the house.
Terrifying also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would never follow a dude into this house.
It is broad daylight, which is about the only redeeming thing here. But it seems like one of those things that I would do, and then I'd be halfway into doing it and be like, wait a minute, why? Why did I say okay to this?
It's like from the outside, it's like, oh, can you find us a house that looks like a murder house or a haunted house or something? It's like, and then just to walk in there with some boy that you barely know is Louise, come on.
So once they're inside the house, everything reverts back to that same slow ass pace as the opening dream sequence. Louise takes off her shoes, hello tetanus, to climb the stairs in search of Brad, who has disappeared. In the slowest game of cat and mouse, Brad makes a psst noise at the top of the stairs. And when Louise looks up to find him, he takes off running. I don't know why, but I laughed so hard and I watched it 3 times. I took a video. I sent it to Kate. I was just like, this is not seriously happening. This is really a part of this movie.
It's like the blocking and the camera work because it like swoops up to him and he's like, ah, and then like runs out of frame.
He's like, hey. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So bizarre. Oh. And there's so much sexy sax music as this bee follows a trail of Brad's discarded clothing like so many Chess King breadcrumbs.
Oh, my gosh.
She takes off her own jacket, drops it to the floor when she finds Brad in a room with boarded up windows, looking like a straight up scene from the Thriller video. Oh, wait. It is literally the actual abandoned house from the Thriller video. Mm-hmm. but because it's lit with warm gels, I guess it's a great place to lose your virginity now. And
I was rewatching this, and I also sent videos to Shannon because the shots in this scene are so ridiculous. She comes up and she sees Brad, and he's just like looking out the lace curtains, and then like it cuts leaning. Back to Louise. Yeah, and then it cuts back to Brad, and he's just like leaning with one foot up on the wall, and his hands or his like thumbs tucked into. She's like, "Yeah, this is how I stand. This is just like how I stand." What? And it's like, oh, this is so bad.
Yeah, just the most casual foreplay ever. Brad and Louise circle each other. She sizes him up in his black shirt with the sleeves cut off, and then they kiss. And it's the only thing that I like about the scene is her four-tiered acid-washed denim skirt, which is a treasure. But the rest of it is so gross. There's a very sexual guitar slide. And Brad lays Louise down on a haunted wicker settee. They kiss a lot, which Robin Lively actually hated filming. And it's very upsetting and awkward when you remember that Louise has just turned 16. It's just so much tongue and eating each other's faces.
This scene will take years off your life. It takes forever, and we have to watch them French to Sexy Sax for so long. Like, you keep thinking it's gonna cut, and then it just keeps going. And then like one sax riff or like, you know, run will die down. You'll be like, surely this is okay. And then it'll and they start kissing again, and you're like, okay.
And it hits a new octave. I know. On my second and third viewings, I had to just look away. It was just, I couldn't. It was so upsetting.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so I'm losing track of the timeline now, but suddenly Louise is debriefing Serena on her escapades. Was it really her that Brad was kissing, or was it just the spell? Serena asks her why it matters. Nothing lasts forever. So mysterious. Back at school, there are posters all over the quad with Louise's name painted on them.
Why?
Like, what is pep this? Rally for Louise?
This is dumb.
It is. And all the girls are dressed just like the new Louise. And now everyone's rehearsing the play. Louise tells Kiki to break a leg, and Kiki immediately trips over a ladder and does just that. As the understudy, Louise has to go on in her place, but she's starting to be a little wary of her own powers.
Yeah, and then also, I don't know how she broke her leg. She fell on her back. She falls over a ladder that's like a foot off the ground and falls on her back. And she's like, my leg! And it's like, your leg didn't touch the ground? I don't know. Anyway, also, there's a little scene right here where Louise has a heart-to-heart with her dad. And because we just covered Valley Girl, otherwise I never would have noticed this, but he delivers almost word for word the exact same, it doesn't matter how other people see you, it matters how you see yourself speech. And then this coupled with the previous scene where they sit on the couch and he pulls out an old pic from a photo album of himself. Like, I think Teen Witch did some almost shot for shot Valley Girl ripoffs is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I think it does a lot of that. Because it comes in 89, it had such a huge, just like playbook
pull from all
of
the
80s movies to pull from. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it did a lot of that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. At cheerleading practice. So forget about tryouts. I guess she just magicked herself right onto the squad. Polly is hurt that Louise turned into a swan and left Polly in the duck pond. Aw. And here is a very Teen Wolf moment where she's stepping on the little people to climb up the social ladder. Please note, Polly is wearing the purple track pants this time, but at least they fit her, so.
Yep.
How are you?
Why?
God, Polly. Come on, we used to be friends.
You never talk to me anymore.
Used to is the operative word.
Why don't I ever see you?
Maybe I don't want to have to make an appointment. You're so busy now.
God, I thought you'd be happy for me.
Delighted.
Oh, come on, Polly. I really miss you.
Why? You need another dweeb hanging on your every precious word?
Believe it or not, I care about you, okay?
Well, you don't act like it.
So we pan through Louise's room now. It's full of ribbons and trophies and photographs. And how long has she been popular?
This I know.
Timeline. I just don't understand it. To see her bookishly enjoying reading by her window, there's noise from outside and we see a crowd of teens chanting, "We want Louise." And an exhausted looking Louise looks remorseful. Being popular is hard. Louise goes for a slow, lonely walk and is picked up by Brad in his Ford convertible. They share a heart-to-heart in a boat on some lake about how tough it is to be good-looking and talented.
Aw, wah! These a-holes.
No. Ugh. He drops her back home and asks her to go to the dance with him. Brad in his Tom Cruise profile interrupt Louise as she tries to tell him that she can't go to the dance because it's, quote, not natural.
Look, you're not phony. You don't play games with people to make them like you more. That's really important to me.
And Brad, I just...
Let me finish. You're honest, and I respect you for that.
No. No, this is a bad idea. I can't go to the dance with you.
Why?
Because there's just something you don't know about me.
I know everything I need to know.
No, you don't.
The next day, Louise goes to Serena's house to get help with reversing her spells. I guess she must have just cast a spell to make Serena's house the most 80s. But it's another one of those things that they either edited out or...
I do not understand this connection. Like, what does Louise being popular have to do with Serena's house being redecorated?
It's not
explained. She just walks in and then the whole house is just like completely redone. And you're like, why?
I don't know if it's like just showing us that Serena's kind of like using her to get her, like, you know, how she had her make money and she had her make her a love slave. And so now she had her redo her house. I don't know. But everything in the house is pink and black lacquer. And Serena's trying to talk Louise out of reversing the spells.
It was. And also, I would have preferred to see the scene explaining this instead of watching Serena get a book off a shelf for freaking ever.
Choices. Mm-hmm. Eventually, a now all of a sudden grandmotherly Serena comes to her senses and tells Louise that the real magic is believing in herself.
Okay, behind the scenes right here, Robin Lively said, and I think an interview or like a something, like a film something, that they filmed the scene where they're sitting on each other's laps right after lunch and that Zelda Rubinstein's breath was so bad that it was hard for Robin Lively to keep a straight face. So remember that next time you watch a scene because it's all I can see when
that
I watch
is
it.
Hilarious. Yeah, and after I read that and watched it again, I saw you can see it. It's actually all over her face. Yeah. That's rough. So now we smash cut to the dance.
I don't hate that.
Yeah, I know. No, the music is fine. It's the fashion that's all over the place. Mm-hmm. Randa is dressed like somebody's mom. Sean's in some delight situation. And Kiki is there, not in a wheelchair. And I thought her leg was broken. So
right?
I guess she got pushed into a pool and the spell reversed.
But again, with this timeline, because it's just like... when did the play happen and what?
I don't know.
I know.
So anyway, aside from a few skinny ties, there's nothing overtly 80s about this teen scene, except for the band, I kind of missed because one of my favorite 80s teen movie tropes is the dance scene because of all the amazing fashion. Not that it was terrible fashion. It, like I said, it was just all over the place and I kind of...
But also, this is their second dance in this movie.
Yeah,
they
that's
the harvest
right.
dance. Yeah. So now they have this dance. So you would assume that it's maybe, I don't know if they say it's prom when they're in the car.
Yeah.
If he just
oh,
says
no.
It's the dance.
Everybody's dressed down.
Yeah, but everybody's just in, like you said, like teen garanimals. Like everything's just like cotton. Randa's kind of wearing like a slinky, you know, like a sequin dress.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad's in a suit, but yeah, everyone's just kind of like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
Like in sweaters and stuff.
Maybe they just have all kinds of random like harvest dance and Winterfest and who knows.
Why Louise is popular now, dance.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So Louise shows up to the dance with Serena on her arm, which was weird. So does she need Serena there to help her reverse the spell because she's still too weak? It's like questionable, like why she's there. Louise has a moment in the spotlight, literally, as some boys lift her onto their shoulders and twirl her around so everyone can get a real good look at her. As they set her down, she removes her amulet and whips it across the room where Serena picks it up. The spotlight fades and everything is normal again. Brad sees her from across the room and the two slow walk to the center of the dance floor where they do mirror image hands and then some straight up dirty dancing moves. And then they just sort of mac on each other while all of the extras dance around behind them.
Yeah! It's gonna be my finest hour. I'm gonna take my dance tonight. Don't stop me now, cause I've got the power. Just be with me in my finest hour. Yes! This is the song I've been singing for 2 days, and if you think that I didn't make that sound clip my new alarm, then you do not know me at all. Oh my gosh, this song. Okay, so much about this scene. The dancing that they're doing is like some Annie Lennox walking on broken glass clown weird interpretiveness where they're like, it's hard to explain. It reminds me of like Labyrinth Ballroom dancing. Kind of. It's very weird. Mm-hmm. They're all doing it. Except for this couple in the bottom right-hand corner. If you notice, either didn't have time to learn the choreography or didn't care. There's like a blonde in all black, and they're just kind of like sort of doing it, but laughing the whole time. So you can keep a lookout for that. Okay, so I wanted to clip that song for nostalgia's sake, just because hearing it, you're like, oh yeah, the scene. But I've never really listened to it before. Okay, listen to the next part at how dramatic the male vocalist is. It's like a dollar store Michael Crawford from Phantom of the Opera. It's crazy.
Thank you for clipping that because I didn't notice it the first time.
I like when he's like, and we'll sip champagne. Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, what is happening right now?
Wow.
Oh, it's so
and
good.
With that glorious music cue, I guess we find that the moral of our story is always decide to be yourself. After you use magic to gain popularity and good looks and trade your loser friend for a tiny old palm reader.
The end. This is also a great lesson for young girls about how the popular guy will only pay attention to you after you've had a makeover and are also popular, despite the fact that people tell you that it's what's on the inside that counts. Mm-hmm. What? Like, I know she takes off the amulet, but she's already...
Yeah, nothing changes.
No,
I know. She's I said every popular. The spotlight turns off and everything goes back to normal, but nothing goes back to normal. Everything stays exactly how she magicked it.
Yeah, it's if she took off her amulet and then she had her like old hair and her dowdy clothes, and then everybody was like, "Get out of here, loser!" Then maybe, but she just takes it off and then she's still like in her hot blue dress and like still in the center of the dance floor. And also, okay. Can we talk about the real victim in this movie? I would posit that it's Randa because her boyfriend breaks up with her to start dating the new popular girl, Louise. Okay. Then when Louise won't go to the dance with him, he goes back to Randa as an obvious backup. Like, all right, I guess I'll go to the dance with you since you're still here or whatever. And then when Louise walks into the dance, he once again ditches Randa mid-song, this time to go do some choreography and making out with Louise in the middle of the dance floor as like an added FU. Like, they're literally in the middle of dancing. Louise walks in and he all but like pushes Randa's face like, yuck. And then walks over to Louise and just starts making out with her where everyone can see them under a spotlight. What's Randa doing? I hope Randa finds new life at SFU. I hope she just flies free and becomes all that she can be.
She will. I think Randa will be fine. She'll marry a well-off guy from a good family and buy a house with a pool. She might be forever in therapy for self-esteem issues, though.
I hope she becomes a private investigator and a detective and tries to find her cousin who's missing.
That's a great spinoff idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Wow. That was a real journey.
It really was.
I feel like we learned a lot about ourselves and authenticity and rapping and penis euphemisms. It was like a really good time. That was a really good time. I'm glad you watched that movie.
Yes. Thank you for putting that in my life. I would have never, ever, ever watched it. No, that's not true. I'm sure I would have watched it at some point.
All right. So join us next week for a new episode. Oh, my goodness. We're going to cover Footloose. Oh, I'm so excited. I love this movie. It's available streaming on Amazon and Hulu, or you can rent it on Amazon, YouTube, or Apple TV. Oh my gosh, it's going to be so fun. This was also a much requested movie, so I can't wait to hear from all the listeners what they think about this. Oh, it's going to be so fun to do an in-depth recap. All right, talk to y'all next week. Bye. Join us each week for a new episode of So 5 Minutes Ago. Check out our Instagram at So 5 Minutes Ago Pod with the number 5 to see visuals and clips from the show. You can also get in touch with us at so5minutesagopod@gmail.com. And please, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Special thanks to Dave Quiggle for creating our podcast music. Talk to you all next week.
Please, so 5 minutes ago.